Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education, presented by Emma O'Duher and Tom Breeze. Episode 10, School Uniform with Dr. Rachel Shanks.
Welcome back, everyone, to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching. Today, we have a special guest with us, and this is somebody who, Tom, you bumped into. You attended their presentation at a conference. So perhaps you would like to do the introductions today.
Yes, I've been prowling the conferences looking for guests again, and I think this is probably the guest who's going to get the award for going above and beyond the call of duty of the podcast, because Dr. Rachel Shanks is from the University of Aberdeen, and having watched Rachel present a really interesting piece about school uniform, which is what we're talking about today, I emailed to ask very nicely if she wouldn't mind joining us down the line from Aberdeen, and was very surprised to get a reply back saying, why don't I just come? So in the studio with us, to my enormous surprise, is Dr. Rachel Shanks from the University of Aberdeen. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you. And what an impressive studio it is. Yeah, I feel like I'm at the BBC.
Worth the 9-hour train journey, we hope.
Definitely.
And yeah, your work is that we're talking about today is about school uniform, but I know you've had a really varied career that's encompassed a lot of different things. So would you like to give us the little sort of potted history of how you've ended up where you are now?
Gosh, yes. I don't think I'm a typical academic. First of all, after leaving university, I did a law degree and a master's. I was an office temp for a year and worked for various temping agencies and businesses for them. And then I was lucky enough to get a job as a law lecturer at Staffordshire University. Did that for 4 years. I spent 2 years thinking it would get easier. And then 2 years thinking, no, it's not getting easier. I was always worried I was going to get asked something that I didn't know the answer to. Then I went and worked for the Trade Union Congress in Birmingham, looked for bargaining for skills, so what became learning reps. And then the funding unfortunately came to an end. And then I worked for Wolverhampton Volunteer Bureau, working with young unemployed people to help them into work. Then I moved to Aberdeen, worked for Aberdeen Citizens Advice Bureau, and then got a job at the University of Aberdeen Centre for Lifelong Learning. And I've missed out a job as well. I worked for the National Association Citizens Advice Bureau in Wolverhampton as an employment rights specialist for a while too. And then when I was at the University of Aberdeen Centre for Lifelong Learning, there was funding for a PhD, and I did a PhD looking at how new teachers learn in the workplace in Scotland, looked at the teacher induction scheme. Did lots of little bits of work, research and teaching. At one point, I had 5 zero-hours contracts at the University of Aberdeen. But because of that, I got to give evidence to the Scottish Affairs Committee in Westminster about zero-hours contracts for academics with the Union UCU. And 2013, I got a permanent job as a lecturer in the School of Education. And I've actually been there until last week. And last week I handed in my key because I've now got a new job at the University of Aberdeen. I'm the Interdisciplinary Institute Director for Social Inclusion and Cultural Diversity, which I think is one of the longest job titles I've had, but of the many job titles, yeah.
It strikes me that we could interview you on any number of those things, but we're here to talk about, as Tom says, school uniform today. So from where did that sort of research itch, that line of inquiry emerge? What sort of got you started on that?
Well, I have to thank a student, Tom Thurer, who was at a university strategy away day. And he mentioned that it was a shame that undergraduates didn't get a chance to work with academics on their own research projects. So rather than doing an honours research project, to actually work with the academic to research something that the academic was researching. So then I thought, oh, you know, that would be really interesting to do. I teach students and staff how to use Envivo. So I thought I could maybe teach students how to use Envivo while also researching and analysing data with myself. Then I had to think, well, what is publicly available data? So easier in terms of ethics, you know, not sharing lots of interview transcripts or whatever with students. And I think I came up with the idea of school uniform. My partner thinks that he came up with the idea. We're not sure, one of us, but I did have a very strict school uniform. So I think it has always been a bit of an interest of mine. And anyway, so came up with the idea of school uniform policies because in Scotland, schools are obliged to, local authority schools are obliged to publish a school handbook every December. And in the school handbook, there's always something about school clothing. So that meant we definitely had data. And so we started off to see if we could look at all the publicly funded secondary schools in Scotland. At the time, there were 357. And the students, 13 students between them, they analysed nearly all of them. I think I probably did the last 40. So between us, we analysed all the school uniform policies. They learnt how to use Envivo, and then three of the students carried on working with me to publish journal articles and a blog post.
Wow. And gosh, it strikes me that there's a hell of a lot of data there to look at, but you were presumably looking for very specific things.
So we started off, I thought, well, let's look at the reasons. Why do schools say they have school uniform? And then, but I wanted very much for the students, it was a new area for me to research as well. And I want, so the students, just as they were looking at the policies, you know, somebody might say, oh, you know, I think we should look at this. And so we'd all add that code, and then we'd maybe go back to previous schools to check if it'd be, you know, what was there. So that probably came up in the first day or two. So as well as looking for the reasons for school uniform, we then looked in terms of gender differences. One of the students noticed employability was mentioned in terms of dressing for the world of work or preparing for the workplace environment. So we also, you know, coded for that. And then the consequences, what happened if you didn't wear school uniform. So we just gradually, so it was very much inductive coding, sort of as people thought, oh, this is of interest, then we would add that to the codes that we were creating.
And I was thinking as I was preparing for this, when I was teaching back in school, I taught in school for 10 years. I think I probably had about two conversations about school uniform ever with my colleagues. I think I had one conversation with a deputy head who actually was not that keen on having school uniform. But it feels like school uniform has almost gone smarter in the last few years. I know when I was teaching, it was jumpers and polo shirts. And now when I visit schools, I tend to see a lot more blazers and ties. Is that just a local thing, or have you noticed something similar there?
So I having sort of recently looked at, you know, probably this year, I'll have looked at the school uniform policies of at least 60 schools, maybe more, in Scotland. I'd actually say it's a different thing that's happening in Scotland. I think in Scotland it's because two things: from returning to school after COVID lockdowns and the cost of living crisis. So I would actually see that schools are trying to reduce the cost of school uniform in Scotland. So one primary school in Aberdeen has actually stopped having a school uniform in the last year, I think primarily for cost reasons. And in, you know, some areas are looking at getting rid of blazers because, again, of the cost. So I don't know whether it's, I sometimes wonder if schools feel that they're in some sort of competition with each other, that there can be a race to be the smartest looking, this idea of the image that they're giving to the local community, to potential parents. So sometimes maybe if one school seems to be reintroducing a blazer, whether that makes other schools think, oh, maybe we need to be similar. But certainly in Scotland, I would say actually it's and with the introduction of new, for the first national guidance in Scotland, I think it's schools are very much paying attention to their school uniform policy in a way that maybe they haven't before.
That's interesting, because I don't think we've got any schools with no school uniform. Are you aware of any ever? I don't know any.
None to my knowledge. No. I'm really curious about this because it strikes me that, I was saying before we started recording, you know, school uniform is ubiquitous. It's one of those things that I think as a teacher, just reflecting on my own my own experience, it was something I didn't really think about because I didn't really have to. And I suppose when you get to senior leadership, that's when you're sort of involved in the school's policy making. You know, of course, I was there to enforce the policy. But it strikes me just from your work that it's a bit of a prism. It can shine a lot on lots of different areas, important topics, ethics, sustainability. And I'm curious to know, when you were analysing that data, were there any moments where something kind of really stopped you dead in your tracks and went, oh my gosh, I hadn't really considered that before?
Well, I think just looking at all the different requirements and thinking about what actually is it for? Why do we still have the same school uniform that I wore, you know, 40 years ago? It just struck me as odd that we just have this sort of this stasis. You know, it just stays the same. It's never questioned. And in terms of that moment, I think at some point I just suddenly thought, why do girls wear ties at school? Women don't wear ties, you know, almost never. And then I got very into the issue of ties. And the bizarre thing is that, you know, ties were developed as an item of clothing from scarves. You know, so yes, women wear scarves, which is what ties developed from. But I did mention this about ties, and an academic in South Africa then sent me several photos of the vice chancellor at his university, who's a woman, because she wears ties. But if you think about it, I think maybe train drivers, you know, female train drivers maybe wear ties, but I can't think of any other profession where women wear ties. So it was really just, well, why are we making girls wear men's clothing? You know, so you know, tie, shirt, blazer, that's, you know, men's clothing from, you could say, another age, because when we think about it now, you know, Thomas here, he is wearing a shirt and jacket, but no tie.
It's in my pocket for your presentation
excellent,
later.
Excellent, excellent.
But you're giving a public presentation later, I shall be all wearing a tie. But no, true.
I'm also wearing a shirt or a blouse and a blazer, but no tie, and no tie in my pocket either. So it's just that, so I feel that we're making girls be like boys. So that was really, for me, one of the, you know, just, oh, you know, sort of startling revelations that I'd never thought about before. And when I do mention that to people, they think, oh, yeah, I've not thought about that before either. Mm. Yeah.
And I suppose gender and style and, you know, the clothing in general, the uniform in general, is in itself a very interesting issue, you know, and how supportive school uniform policies are of people who are non-binary or from LGBTQ backgrounds and therefore feel that the uniform isn't really right for them. So, you know, this is, you look at this in any sort of direction, you could go into quite a lot of depth in these areas. But of course, from this, I suppose you had to have a sort of so what on a sort of governmental level in order to make some sort of recommendations, I guess. Mm-hmm. And you came up with this framework, which I found really clear and accessible and informative. And you've got these sort of three principles of, mm-hmm. of the framework: affordability, comfort, and sustainability. Tell us a little bit about those aspects, mm-hmm. and why they're important for schools to consider.
So first of all, I was thinking about the cost of uniform. And then I spoke with a very learned colleague, Professor Pamela Abbott at the University of Aberdeen. And she said, well, Rachel, it's not about cost, it's about affordability, because if everyone can afford it, it doesn't matter how much it costs. So I realised, you know, so that actually, yes, it's affordability of the uniform. And what we don't want to be doing is making people with the lowest incomes poorer through school uniform, which is what can happen at the minute. And then I thought we should really be looking at it holistically. So as well as affordability, I call it comfort, although for the Scottish Government guidance, they asked me to change it to equality, diversity and inclusion. But I use the word comfort because I originally come from the north of Ireland. And I think sometimes, you know, in people can think that rights are for other people. They're not, you know, they don't see human rights as being for them somehow. There can be this tension that people can be So I thought, well, comfort, everyone, it's hard to be against comfort. So that was why I came up with the word, you know, and I just felt, well, children and young people should be comfortable at school. You know, they're sitting almost all day, and why would we have them in, you know, synthetic fibres maybe, and in, you know, formal clothing when they're young people at home? They're probably going to be in more comfortable clothing, sweatshirts, joggers, jeans, whatever. So I thought there was a tension there in terms of comfort, but also thinking about in terms of equality, you know, race, religious belief, as well as gender, issues to do with non-binary and transgender, and in terms of disability, but also in terms of in Scotland we call additional support needs, or, you know, additional learning needs. I think it's going to, you know, it's now being called in Wales. So I was thinking of those sort of sensory issues, you know, maybe children with and young people with autism. It comes up in an article in research about children and young people with autism, about them finding difficulty with school uniform if they have to go to a different fabric, you know. So just sort of that general comfort issue. And then I've always been interested in the environment, so sustainability, because the issue can be with affordability. Well, yes, that uniform might be very cheap, but actually, why is it cheap? You know, who's made it? And just this awful thought, well, could it be that children in Bangladesh, because a lot of textiles in the UK are manufactured in Bangladesh, or could it be that children in Bangladesh are actually making the uniform that for children in you know, in parts of the UK to wear? So I just felt that there's an awful lot of textiles go into landfill, you know, so this thing of, well, are we creating this sort of almost fast fashion out of school uniform that's then really, you know, could be detrimental to people in the global south and manufacturing it? Then it's being transported, you know, halfway across the world. And then what happens? Maybe it's only used for one school year, and then it might end up in landfill. So it was trying to bring all the different parts together.
Mm-hmm. And the affordability one is a particularly interesting one, isn't it? Because one of the arguments for school uniform that you often hear is, oh, if we don't have a school uniform, there's going to be this sort of clothing arms race, if you like, amongst the pupils. They're all going to be judging one another based on the clothes that they wear. It's so much kinder and more equitable to those who are less well off if everybody wears the same. But we've heard a huge amount about these monopolies, these single suppliers of uniform who sell things which are branded with the school's logo or whatever it may be at really quite inflated prices. And there've been some attempts to stamp that sort of practice out, but your work has found that actually these single suppliers do seem to still be with us.
Yes. So I think certainly in Scotland, we found that maybe 20% of secondary schools at the time. Now, I think it might have changed, you know, slightly since then. But again, I think it's just there's so many competing demands on head teachers. And so if you've got a system that seems to work with a supplier, and maybe, you know, your day job isn't to tender for contracts, you know, to find other suppliers to bid. So what I've heard from uniform suppliers as well, you know, that it tends to be more informal process than you would have if it was done at a local authority level with, you know, a formal bidding process. So I think there is that, you know, if something, it feels that it's not broken, you know, it doesn't change. So it's the same supplier, the same arrangements. With the issue of the sort of a clothing arms race that you mentioned, Tom, certainly work that the Child Poverty Action Group in Scotland has done in the past with parents and young people is that it does help to create that level playing field if everyone has a uniform, is if everyone is starting with the same, more or less the same clothes. But the issue is how to make those affordable so that you haven't got that difference between people. So a colleague in Scotland, when he worked in England, their rule at school was just no logos. So there was no school logo, but also there was no other logo. So there was no branding. So there was none of that competition then. So I think that's part of it. But it's also making sure that, you know, you start off, everyone is... Obviously, you can still tell from people's trainers, maybe their coats, their school bags, whatever. But it's just that it's making it, hopefully reducing stigma and making people feel more able to go to school. Because unfortunately, there are examples, people tell me, of people not starting school at the beginning of the school year because their family hasn't been able to afford the school uniform. So that's the sort of thing that I really hope that we can, you know, work so that that's not the case.
This is an issue that I'm sure many young people will have an opinion on and ought to have their views sought. And I wonder what is a reasonable period of time or sequence of consulting young people about their views? Because I note from some of the correspondence that you've put out there around this framework that you emphasise the importance of the rights of the child, but also encourage schools to engage learners in policy. Mm-hmm. How frequently should that happen? What sort of questions should we be asking? How do we do that as schools?
So I've been proposing that maybe every, you know, 3 to 5 years, there should be a consultation with young people, with parents, with you know, relevant community groups. Just so that young people get at least one or two chances while they're at primary school and then secondary school to have a say. And I guess in some ways it's maybe not going to help them so much, but it's going to help, you know, the next cohort of students going through the school. And what I don't mean by that is that school uniforms should change every 3 to 5 years, because one of the things in terms of making school uniform or school clothing sustainable is that if there are changes, they should be worn out, you know what I mean? So that you'd always have maybe 2 uniforms on the go. You'd have the old one, and then, but until that clothing had been exhausted, everyone could still wear it if they wanted to, and then you'd sort of gradually sort of bring in the new uniform. But the issue really for me is just to make sure that, you know, the people that are going to a school are changing, you know, and so they should have a chance to say, well, do I want to wear what my parents or maybe even what my grandparents were wearing to this school? And maybe actually would rather have hoodies than jumpers. We don't want to have ties, or we think maybe, you know, only the older stages need to have, you know, blazers if they want to have blazers, or that blazers should be truly optional. The difficulty sometimes with optional items is whether people who can afford them buy them, and then they're not really optional. So there's a difficulty, I think, sometimes with optional items. And I'm not saying that young people that decide, you know, totally what they wear, because sometimes they're maybe not taking everything into consideration. I remember, you know, secondary school, young people thought, oh, let's have a wear purple to school day in support of LGBTQI rights. But obviously not everyone has something purple, you know, so it's that thing of thinking through and maybe unintended consequences. But I definitely think now in Scotland, we just had in July the incorporation of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child into Scots law. So Article 12, you know, involving young people in decisions that affect them is even more important for us in Scotland. But obviously all of the UK is signed up to the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. I think it in terms of, if it's okay to mention John Dewey, you know, I think this school uniform is a perfect example of involving young people in decisions that affect them and then helping them to see that actually they can be part of decisions that affect them outside of school and after school, you know, after they've left school. So I just feel that it's something, you know, that really affects them. It's on their bodies, you know, for an awful lot of time during the week. It affects how they're sitting, you know, It affects activity to and from school. So several studies recently have found, in different parts of the world, have found about how what girls are expected to wear to school, wearing skirts or dresses, limits their amount of physical activity to and from school and during the school day. So it has a big impact on young people's lives. And that's why I feel they should be involved in what it is that they have to wear.
It's fascinating, this issue of comfort and how it's potentially throwing, creating a bit of tension between the purposes and the reason for the policy making decisions on a school level for uniform, what they're trying to do. It strikes me this idea that might be becoming quite outdated now. We're preparing them for the world of work and we're preparing them to be taken seriously, when we actually know that even the world of work now, I mean, I'm sitting here as we're speaking in jeans. We have had a policy university-wide that everybody is free to come to work and encouraged actually to come to work in trainers to encourage people to use sustainable methods of travel and to be more comfortable. And I just wonder, obviously we need the pupil voice angle, but is this an opportunity for schools to just return to the why of their policy, the purpose of their policy? And it might start to throw into relief sort of the purpose of school, the purpose of education. What are we here for? And how is the dress code speaking to that why? Mm-hmm. Not really a question there, Rachel, musings.
Yes, and I've written down about the trainers because I'm very interested in that, about the university encouraging staff to come and train us. I've not heard of that before. Mm-hmm. And actually in the study of the secondary schools in Scotland, a lot of the schools explicitly banned the young people from wearing trainers, and which means then that families are having to buy, black shoes for school, as well as, other shoes outside of school. And in, I think it was about February 2021, when I was speaking online to an MSP, I was shocked that she told me that her niece had been sent home in 2021 for not wearing the correct school shoes. So that was, after having lockdowns, but the school still felt, oh no, you've come in the wrong shoes, we're going to send you home to change your shoes. So that, it to me, it just seemed, what does it matter what shoes, people are wearing? And, trainers are probably, more comfortable, and it makes it more affordable if everyone, then you can have one pair of shoes. Because, of course, we have to remember young people's feet are growing all the time, and we don't want them to be wearing shoes that are too small because parents can't afford to, or carers can't afford to get new shoes.
Yeah, just building on that question, really, and I don't know whether you've got an answer for this, whether you've looked into the sort of attitudes and the reasons. But as Emma was saying that, I was thinking, it's weirdly out of kilter, isn't it? Uniform, the thing we haven't thought about. We've got all this stuff about UN Convention of Rights of the Child, new curriculum for the Education 2030. Let's move away from the idea of the sort of 70s where you went to school for a job for life. Also in Wales and probably in Scotland, a bit of a rejection of that thing we were hearing in England about quite a sort of instrumental view of education for most children. They're being educated to go and, get a job. And yet, strangely, we still have this school uniform, which the more you talk about it, the more feels like it contradicts that vision at the moment. And I suppose the thing I'm wondering, and I don't know if you're in a position to answer it, but I'm going to ask it anyway, is it that people have missed it, that it's a sort of blind spot, or is it a sign that maybe people are not quite as on board with some of this happy stuff as we'd like to think?
Yeah, so I think it's a combination. I think it's that thing of it's so taken for granted, we don't see it. So I once was at a talk where somebody was saying that they were in some part of the Soviet Union, and there was this thing where when the school pupils finished their work, they always would move their jotter to the right-hand corner of their desk. And this visitor pointed this out. Oh, I see that when everyone's finished, you always move your work. Do we? And they didn't see it because it was just so taken for granted. They couldn't actually when they were asked about it, they couldn't see it. And I think with school uniform, it's sort of similar. We can't imagine school without school uniform. And yet, if we think of Finland, which is always held as the beacon, you know, a long time been held as the beacon for all things to do with school education, there isn't a single school in Finland with a school uniform. Now, Finland is a much more equal society. So, and if we look across the world, most countries actually do have a school uniform in one way or another. So I think in terms of us having the unequal society, unfortunately, in some ways, I think a school uniform can help. But I think the reasons that we give for it in policies or in government documents don't mention that maybe it's also about control. That maybe, and not necessarily completely in a bad way, because it can be, you know, when you think about it, especially in the upper stages of secondary school, you know, what if the young people just said, no, we're not interested in doing that today? You know, so it can be quite, you know, interesting to think, well, you know, what if they just suddenly decided, you know, they weren't going to do, why do they listen to me? Why does everyone follow these rules? Oh, the bell's gone, you have to go to the next class. Oh, you have to walk down this corridor, not that corridor. Oh, you can't talk to me like that. And I just wonder whether having everybody in a uniform in shows the authority that the teacher has. The teacher is wearing their own clothes. The teacher can make a statement about themselves. The teacher is an individual. The teacher is in charge. And the young people in the class are a mass. They are all the same. They are being treated as a group. They are not individuals. And so that gives the teacher extra authority. Now, I just wonder if that's part of the attraction, a sort of subconscious attraction to uniform, that it helps to keep the functioning of schools, when actually, what if the young people realised how much power they really have to resist? And generally speaking, they don't use it collectively. But if they looked at their counterparts in France, they maybe would see that actually they could use it more frequently than they do.
And it does make me a little bit concerned as well when I see as a list of reasons given for school uniform from your research, one of them being about enhancing the reputation of the school. So there's that power and control, but then there's also this sort of marketing competitive angle that, you know, if I were to send my child to that school, which has got a very relaxed and, you know, if they're wearing, you mentioned, was it South Korea where they were thinking about tracksuits? What did I get that?
Malta.
Yep. Apologies. We were talking before we started rolling. And that sounds really appealing. But, you know, will there be, you know, some kind of backlash? Would I want to send my child to this school, which has got tracksuits, or this school where they're, you know, suited and booted and they've got blazers? And, you know, it's it becomes quite complicated and a little bit just unpleasant when you look at it from that perspective.
Yes, and so the research that I did on the secondary schools was all publicly funded secondary schools in Scotland, because that's where the vast majority of young people go. But obviously there are some fee-paying private schools, and so it might be that in some schools they've maybe felt sort of in competition, wanting to show potential parents that, you know, they can send their children to that secondary school. They're just as smart as the pupils going to, you know, a fee-paying secondary school. But interestingly, during the pandemic, there was a well-known private school in Aberdeen where they were happy for the young people to go every day in a tracksuit. They didn't have to wear their school uniform, whereas local authority schools were saying, well, come in a tracksuit on the days that you've got PE, but you must wear your school uniform the other days. Now, of course, then what happened was every day people would have PE. And so then there would have to be a clarification of, you know, that you're only meant to be wearing your PE kit or your tracksuit on PE days. But I think that still happens a little bit, because a lot of schools have still kept that, that you can you can go to school in your PE kit on days that you've got PE so that you don't have to. And I think that's partly a hangover from the pandemic, but I think it's also a realisation that actually maybe it encourages more young people to do sport if they know they don't have to get changed before and after the activity.
And your work has had a fair amount of impact on the Scottish political parties, because I think three of them ended up making pledges about school uniform, and I think it did end up in the programme of government for the Scottish government. How happy are you with the impact you've had? Do you feel that they've taken enough notice or not?
Yeah, I mean, I was, as I've said, you know, at different times I feel, you know, being very lucky. You know, one was to get 13 amazing students to take part in the research to begin with. I hadn't really thought the fact, well, who's going to give up a week of their time just for, you know, coffee, lunch and travel expenses. But also then I discovered that Scotland was the only area of part of the UK that didn't have any non-statutory or statutory guidance, no national guidance on uniform. Then in terms of timing, I issued a briefing in November 2020, and that was in the lead up to the Scottish parliamentary elections in May 2021. So education spokespeople in the different parties were looking for new things to put in their manifestos. And because of COVID, I was able to have online meetings with a lot of MSPs and education spokespeople. And so, yes, it went into three parties' manifestos for the parliamentary elections in 2021 in Scotland, and then became part of the programme of government to have a consultation and to have statutory guidance. So we had the consultation, and then in September, we've now got the first national guidance. It's non-statutory at the minute, with a view to maybe after the next parliamentary elections, there being time to make it statutory guidance. So I'm you know, delighted that we've now got that guidance for school. I think it's maybe difficult in that the guidance is about 40 pages long. So that's a lot of information for schools to look at. So as well, but it is, does reference the clothing framework that I developed with colleagues in Education Scotland, Child Poverty Action Group and Aberdeen for a Fairer World. So what I'm thinking would might be useful as well is to develop toolkits, you know, sort of like sample surveys to help schools who are consulting, you know, children and young people about their uniform. So I think it's you know, it's an ongoing thing, but I'm being pleased at what's happened, you know, so far. It's just the level of clothing grants is still less than that maybe covers all the clothing costs. But obviously what I always said was it's maybe not necessarily about always increasing how much the clothing grant is. Maybe it's about lowering what the expectations are. So actually we're not increasing costs on the public purse, but actually making it more affordable for everybody. You know, that if we say actually, you know, why not wear what you were wearing during the pandemic when you were at home doing your schoolwork, you know, at primary school, joggers, you know, T-shirts and sweatshirts, you know, and then, you know, have a think about how formal does it have to be in secondary school? Do we still need to pretend that we're going to a job in an office in the 1950s? Yeah.
Lots to chew over there, lots to consider, and certainly later on today you'll be presenting this work to colleagues in Wales, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of conversation following on from that. Thank you very much, Rachel, for giving us the insight into that work. Really fascinating, and I'm sure that we'll have you back at some point to find out if it's sort of gained traction in Scotland and if you've looked back at your old school and things have started to change. Okay, I am mindful that we got our two short slots, and I know that you've been doing your prep in that long journey down from Aberdeen. So would you like to do your something interesting first?
Yeah, so something interesting is just what I happen to be watching on Netflix at the minute. It's a comedy series called Breeders with Martin Freeman and Daisy Haggard, which I think was originally on Sky, and I don't have Sky, like Rishi Sunak. But so, or when he was a child anyway. So, yeah, and I really like it because to begin with, I thought, oh, it's a bit of like a mixture of, you know, it's a bit like Outnumbered and, you know, the sort of, oh, the, you know, the hard time the parents have. But I also really like that it's intergenerational, you know, so it's about the grandparents, the parents, but it's also about the young people and just how the young people developed and the issues they have. So I felt it really, you know, focused on the young people more than a lot of TV shows. So I'm really enjoying that at the minute. And I think just showing that parents aren't, you know, usually in TV series, the parents are fantastic, but actually showing how parents aren't great is also really good, you know, and it's sort of heartening in a sense to have that more realistic portrayal of parenthood. So that was my, yeah, something to have a look at.
Yeah, lovely. And have you got something that our listeners can try?
So I just thought if you're a teacher in a school or you're a student teacher on placement, what about looking at the school uniform in your school and working out how much it would cost if you had a child at that school? So thinking not just, you know, a blazer and one shirt and one pair of trousers, but if you were to have five shirts or blouses, if you were to have two pairs of trousers or two skirts, and, you know, in case one of them got stained during the week, the shoes, the PE kit, the underwear, the coat. Is there a homework bag that isn't compulsory but seems to be like everyone feels they have to have? You know, is there a particular T-shirt for PE that, well, you don't have to have, but maybe people feel they have to have? So just every single thing that you can think of that actually we probably need for school uniform and PE kit, add that all up, then find out is how much, you know, what's the difference between that and the allowance from, you know, from the Welsh government, and just to you know, just to see how much does it all come to.
And I was going to ask, actually, before we let you go, if anybody listening to this has suddenly thought, oh, there's nothing actually stopping us having a little think about our school uniform for the first time in who knows how long, maybe mm-hmm. somebody's thinking, oh, maybe we should start this conversation and speak to our pupils about what's comfortable for them and mm-hmm. start having conversations about sustainability as well as affordability. Is there somewhere they can go for goodies from your work or things they can read or things they can use?
Well, what I've tried to do is put everything that I've done on a website at the University of Aberdeen. So there's a lot of things there, and we've also, there's a link there then to our, you know, sort of framework for action, just sort of set of questions to have a think about, and then and further resources. But I mean, one of the things that I've done in a previous project with secondary school students who were studying politics was that they had to do a research unit as part of their sort of final year work. So they first of all, they took part in a focus group with myself and other researchers, but then they became the focus group facilitators with younger pupils. So then they were getting, you know, that sort of research experience. So I think actually probably the, you know, working with young people, they know what the issues are, because school uniform and school toilets are generally speaking the two, you know, biggest issues, most common issues that young people mention. So I think actually asking the young people, well, what are the issues in our particular school about uniform, you know, what do people like, what don't they like, you know, what would people like to change? It can be, you know, a small number of questions, but maybe with the older pupils then trialling those out amongst themselves and then cascading that down.
Dr. Rachel Shanks. Oh my gosh, I'll try that again.
Dr.
Rachel Shanks, thank you very much for your time, for your insight, and good luck with the rest of your work.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with another episode in a fortnight. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education presented by Emma O'Duha and Tom Breeze. The special guest this episode was Dr. Rachel Shanks, all the way from the University of Aberdeen, and thanks to Rachel for making the epic trip. Podcast artwork is by Beth Blandford and the music is by Cameron Stewart. Technical support from Peter Lambin and the studio manager is Adrian Rapps. We're still on X at Talk Teaching Pod if you want to come and say hello. We'll be back in a fortnight with something else interesting. Until then, take care and enjoy teaching.